Howdy, folks. Double J here. That's right. That's J-E-double-F-J-A-double-R-E-double-T. That's Double J, Jeff Jarrett. Tune in here to Reffin' It Up with my pals, RJ and Brian Hebner. It's really a great podcast. Tune in every Wednesday morning when it drops. Check them out on social media. Subscribe to the podcast. And man, this episode is a good one. I listen to it every week. Stay tuned, guys. Reffin' It Up with RJ and Brian.
Get ready for the hottest new podcast in the world. From WWE to TNA, by way of the NWA, it's time for Reffin' It Up with current Impact referee Brian Hebner. An all-new episode starts in... This is Reffin' It Up.
Welcome to episode 12 of Reffin' It Up with Brian Hebner. I am the man with the magic voice. He is and forever will be the man in the stripes, Mr. Brian Hebner. Brian, what's up, man?
Not a lot, man. Not a lot. Just a busy week. Working on some things for Slammiversary. A few surprises that I'm being told and things of that nature. This episode's about Rey Mysterio. I'm really excited. And let's dive into it, man.
Yeah, definitely looking forward to it. So let's head up to our first count of this episode. As of this recording right now, we're recording Monday evening. Last night was Hell in the Cell. Cody Rhodes beat Seth Rollins, but believe it or not, he had a completely torn right pectoral muscle. Dude, I don't know if he had a chance to saw this. I ended up watching it twice. Gavin ended up watching me the second time, trying to explain to him why his chest was all discolored. But I just want to read a brief synopsis from Wrestling Inc. and Wrestling Zone. WrestleZone. Cody could be facing a lengthy layoff from the ring following his impressive Hell in a Cell match performance due to his recent injury. Fightful Select reports that the American Nightmare is set to undergo surgery this Thursday. Several notable WWE superstars have suffered the same injury and missed anywhere from 4 months to a realistic 5 months. Cena suffered the same injury, was out 4 months. Triple H and Elias was out 5. So this is kind of putting him out until about Survivor Series towards the end of the year, pretty much. What's your thoughts on this when you saw this come down?
Man, I just really just feel bad for Cody. The timing was impeccable. The guy was on a hellacious ride. Storyline wise, couldn't be done any better right now for him. I don't know. I know things happen in this business like that. And I know that there are, you can't get around them sometimes. They just can't. So very unfortunate. I feel bad for him. I really wish speedy recovery. And you would you say surgery on Thursday?
Yeah, he's scheduled for surgery on Thursday. Anywhere from, they're saying 3 to 5, what have you. So I'm going with 4 to 5 months. I'm going the high end, just saying November time. A lot of people are saying, let's put him back into a Royal Rumble, see what happens there. But they may be better safe than sorry, I guess. And my thoughts are.
Yeah. I mean, well, the thing is too, sometimes these injuries can actually benefit your career. So this may be, God works mysterious ways. And, instead of a pity party, maybe this is something that will, not that he need to be rejuvenated at this point, but but maybe this will give him some more fire underneath. So who knows? But I'm kind of like you. If I was betting, I would say 4 to 5 months. The question I have now is whether they would do anything with him, between now and then.
Yeah. Well, who knows? He's scheduled to go on Raw tonight. As like I said, as we're recording on Monday, he's scheduled to go on Raw and try to explain the situation, what's going to go on, all that stuff. So I'm sure a lot of people will be watching that. You know, rumors started swirling about his injury after he was removed from a live event in Champaign, Illinois on the 4th. And, you know, as you know, a lot of, if you see it online, it's got to be true at this point. But yeah, man, it's just unbelievable what he put himself through to get out there, put a show on. And honestly, man, he's got to be commended. I know a lot of people are going to be talking about this over the next few days. And I just, it's unreal, man. It's absolutely unreal.
No, it just, it, man, it shows that he's a tough son of a bitch. I mean, that's a major injury and it hurts like shit. Now, I have never had it done, but I have had some people I knew that had, and it was very, very gruesome. Yeah, it's just unbelievable that he was able to do it on the 4th and come back and go to the Hell in a Cell and actually physically put on a great match, you know. So hats off to him, man, for just the bravery, man. I guess is what the word, I was lost for words there. But yeah, I mean, it's just unreal. And it just hats off to Cody, man. Unreal and just very tough to do. Ask anybody else to do that and it's tough. I'm not saying nobody can do it, but man, Jesus, not the easiest thing in the world.
Well, dude, the match itself was 20 plus minutes. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, each and every time, I'm like, you have to be thinking to yourself, it's like, what is he got to be feeling? What is he thinking? Now, you mentioned somebody, did you ever like hear about how it actually like feels, or do you have any, you know, inside information on that, or was it just kind of passing thing?
Well, no, I don't have any experience per se with it, but I just know that one of my buddies, and this was actually not somebody in the wrestling business. Mm-hmm. It's just like, it's gruesome inside, like what happens to your body. Like, in other words, you saw this chest, and some people were speculating whether he had makeup on his chest, and that's ridiculous. No, that's not makeup. Believe me, he didn't need makeup.
Yeah.
It's just a tissue falling off the bone kind of thing. Yucky, bloody, all inside. I was told it was the most painful thing he's ever went through. And, this guy's actually a catcher, and you can imagine how they get beat up back there. Yeah. And oh yeah, and all the injuries they get. And he just told me this was just something he had never experienced in his life. And the rehab part of it was just the beginning. I mean, that was just, it's not easy. It's not easy to get over that. That's why I'm leaning towards the back end of that time frame as far as being ready to come back.
Yeah. I'd almost want to say even like 6 or 7 months, just like I said, just to be sure, because Cody's still a young guy for the business. He's about 37, 38 years old. So he's not, you know, he's not young, but he's not old. So he's still got years ahead of him. So it's like, you know, same thing. Like I said, Triple H, John Cena, Elias had the same thing, and they came back and they still went for quite some time.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I mean. So, you know, and do you just kind of leave him off TV for that whole span and then surprise him when he comes back? Or do you keep him in something going with without working physically in the ring, obviously? Mm-hmm. I don't know. As me and you talked about this earlier, together, you know, me and you, you know, it depends on what I think too. Like you had actually be the one that said it, that where they're at talent pool wise, you know, if they're running short on characters or running short on storylines, you never know. But I see it as they want to get this guy back 100%. And probably do it without him on TV.
Well, it might be a perfect time for the Legends Night or something that they always do when they don't know what else to do. Hey, let's bring back a bunch of legends and go on a Raw or something and pop the ratings for that or something. That was always a running joke online. It's like, oh, when WWE doesn't have anything better to do to storyline wise, oh, then we'll just bring back a handful of legends and see what happens.
Yeah. No, you're right. Once again, just very unfortunate, but he'll be fine. He's young. He'll get over it. He's got a young healing body. Mm-hmm. So he'll be ready to rock and roll 5, 6, 7 months, whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. I think they'll needs to as well. So, I mean, obviously.
Right. You know, and something else I wanted, we briefly talked about it before we hit record. I want to just briefly talk about it, is this new news coming out about Stephanie McMahon. I know Vince McMahon was coming out with his, when he was on the Pat McAfee show, saying, I'm paraphrasing, of course, is when somebody in the family has gone away or some taken out of work or whatever the case may be, they weren't doing their job. I'm paraphrasing, but
yeah,
I thought originally when I heard it live, this goes back right before WrestleMania when he was on the show, I thought he was referring to Shane, because that was about the same time that Shane was leaving. But now that I think about it, it's like, okay, well, maybe that could be in consideration to what Stephanie's been doing.
Well, I just find it weird, man, that, you know, we originally talked about this on our previous podcast. All this stuff wasn't out. This was just like she was taking it for family time, and it was kind of like nothing more to it. Just that was it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking that something's not right in paradise, for sure.
Right.
And taking context out of what he said on Pat McAfee's show, that could be very well meant towards both of them. I heard that, you know, that she wasn't doing enough or doing right with the role that she was in. I think enough was the key word, wasn't doing her part, pulling her weight.
Sure.
How do we know that she just didn't, that my dad and daughter didn't just get into it a little bit about that and take my ball and run home? I don't know. There's simply more to it though.
Well, I think there's more to, there may be more to the story than we really think. And I think it's only going to come out over time.
It definitely will. It keeps on coming out with stuff. So
why, but the thing is, I just think it's kind of ironic at this point where it's like, okay, they got to come out with something to stay in the news or something. Maybe it's that, I don't know. But like you said, it's kind of ironic that it's coming out now. No.
Yeah.
When she's been out of work for a little bit, but anyways, let's head up to our second count of this episode as we get into Mr. Rey Mysterio. Right, Brian, so the main event of our episode is on Rey Mysterio, somebody that you had quite some familiarity with when you were on SmackDown. Did you happen to see, before he came into the company, did you happen to, I know you in previous shows, you've mentioned that you're a fan of WCW. Did you ever get a chance to watch his work there in the, probably at that point in the mid to late 90s?
I did watch some of it. I just didn't see enough, you know what I mean, to really be excited one way or another when I actually physically heard he was coming into WWE. I remember doing a house show, and Johnny Ace was actually at the show, and he had told me, well, he had said something about Rey Mysterio was coming in, and I was like, really? I said, I know he does some good stuff. I mean, what do you think of him? And he's like, he's one of the best luchador wrestlers you'll ever see in your life. You just wait. And so that kind of got me excited, because I was just like, oh, wow, Johnny Ace said that. So I knew who he was and had saw some work, but nothing to where I could really ever tell you what I saw when he got here to WWE.
Right. Yeah. Because like you said, he had those legendary matches with like Dean Malenko and Eddie, Benoit, Jericho. So he was the cruiserweight division in WCW. And I think that's what kind of really drew the companies to him. You know, he started wrestling, Matt, at 14. This is something that, I guess, legally can't really happen nowadays. But a lot of things have obviously happened since he began his professional wrestling career in 1989. It's just unreal that he's still going today, man. Do you just credit a lot of, because his injuries are documented fairly well. Do you think it's just a matter of just staying in shape as well as he has? It's kind of like, outweighed his injuries?
I don't know, man. I don't know. It's the most ironic thing I've ever seen in my life. It's not like he takes care of his body as far as in ring.
Right.
Guys all over the place. Works a totally different style. But I will say, you have to just contribute to just a freak athlete, man. Some people can do it and some people can't. But like you said, he's got, documented history of injuries. You know what I mean? And it's, his body's banged up. I mean, I remember, and maybe a lot of people won't remember this, but there was a big show out in Phoenix, Arizona, that I was very privileged to do. And it was where they had a boxing match. They had a MMA fight. They had a wrestling match. They had a concert. It was huge. I don't remember what it was called. And Jim Ross called the action out there in Phoenix. And I was brought in to referee this match. And it was Kurt Angle and Rey Mysterio. And everybody saw all this other stuff that they had. This was just a wrestling match in that thing. They built it with, Rey and Kurt. And then they had this huge boxing fight. And then this huge MMA fight. And then there was some other stuff on it as well. But anyway, we were so proud that night, all of us, even including JR. We tore the fucking house down and we made those people be like, shit, these wrestling guys know what the fuck they're doing. We entertained. It was awesome. We had taken a ref bump where we had to have this rapper come in and get involved and, good stuff. But this wasn't for any federation. This was just for I don't know what it was exactly, but it was pretty cool.
Like an indie show, you mean?
Well, it wasn't a wrestling show. We were the only wrestling match on the show.
Oh, okay. So it was like a kind of like a festival kind of thing,
Yeah, one night with everything, with a boxing fight or match, and a wrestling match, kind of crazy.
Right. Yeah. So he would debut in '96 in WCW, but previous to that, the year before in '95, he would sign with ECW. And dude, if anybody can find it, I would highly suggest watching any of Rey Mysterio versus Psicosis, dude. Absolutely phenomenal. He had a best 2 out of 3 falls match and a Mexican death match, which just Google it. It's just unreal that what these guys have gone through. Just between him and Psicosis, him and Hoovy, in early 96, before he would make the jump over to WCW. But obviously he'd make his really big splash in June of 96 at the Great American Bash, taking on the cruiserweight challenging Dean Malenko for the cruiserweight championship, which Malenko retained. But it just goes to show you, man, the cruiserweight division in WCW was unlike any other. That's what separated, I think, WCW from WWF at this in the mid 90s.
No, it did. It did. I mean, it was a clear distinction. And it was almost like, if you think about when Impact had their X division, it was kind of like that too. Mm-hmm. On a smaller comparison, obviously. But the thing what's crazy for me is that, before I actually got, into the business itself and started working on a full-time basis, I feel like me and my friends, when we sat around and watched, which I'm regretting now, looking back at old matches and stuff, but we were more into the WWE style, the bigger guys, not the flying around guys. You know what I mean? So it was kind of like we flipped to it and see it and be like, oh, it's so-and-so and so-and-so. All right, well, let's go back to the Undertaker burying somebody, or whatever it is.
Right.
So it was just, I kind of overlooked it basically a fan, I just kind of overlooked it and didn't pay much to it. And I kind of wish I wouldn't have been that way, but that's the way I was. And me and my friends were. So I find that interesting because I'm wondering how many other people were like that, because were there, this is something that I don't know if we both would know or not. I know I don't at this point because I'm asking the question, but were their cruiserweights big draws rating wise?
They were really put on. Eric Ritt, when he was part of the producing, I know Eric is on record saying that he put them on beginning of the cards, whether it be whether it be Nitro or whether it be pay-per-views. And they were really trying to grab those, the Mexican demographic, the Spanish speaking demographic, you know, South America, really become, try to become globally known, because you knew WWF at that time, they're going all over. They're in the UK, they're over across the pond. WCW really wanted to get South America, right. Central America, which that's where a lot of these cruiserweights came from. You know, you got Super Calo, you had Hoovy, you had Psychosis, just to name a few. But it's, I don't think that they properly got the just do that division, because by the time, you know, when he'd come over to WWE in 2002, and the cruiserweights were like, oh, well, whatever. It was a handful of guys. Go over. You're seeing guys like Ultimo Dragon, man. You're going to have Great Muta come over. He wasn't obviously in the, with the cruiserweights, but it's just, you get that kind of that foreigner-esque talent. And it just, it really sets him apart, but it's just like, you get such a huge, like, roster of cruiserweights. Then you go over 2002, it's like, okay, well, you got like four, five. You got them on one hand, and what you have in the cruiserweights, it's always, you can always have so many matches with them. With these guys, they had a working relationship at this time. I say about 96, 97. They had a working relationship with AAA down in Mexico. They had a working relationship with New Japan. So he still had a lot of those guys coming from over from Japan too for the cruiserweights.
Yeah, no, yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you. And that's what you basically said what I was saying. Like, in other words, I underrated them. Like, in other words, I was just more into what they were doing on the other show as opposed to that point in time. And like I said, when I go back and watch film and watch matches and stuff like that, man, it was so good. It was so good. And I feel like the commentary was so good on it as well, as those guys were in there in WCW.
Well, and I think, and I was the same way. I was really the same way, because we'd always used to have, I'd say about 99 to... about 2002, give or take, until we graduated from high school. But probably me and probably about four or five other buddies of mine would rotate going house to house and watching WWF pay-per-views. You know, that parent would pay for the pay-per-view and everybody else would get the food or something. You know, just kind of get together and watch wrestling. We never did it for WCW just because we didn't want to. And plus, honestly, too, by 99, that really, you know, really the writing was on the wall with WCW by then. But I go back and I'm like, man, I wish we really would have started doing that. Obviously, 96, we were 12 years old. You know what I mean? So it's not like we're not going to sit there and go house to house and that stuff. But I ended up watching it. You know, I was fortunate enough. My grandmother had a satellite dish next door. Man, it was probably a matter of 50 to 100 yards away from our house. So she ran a line to our house and a line to her house. So I grew up with, I had the fortunate to watch WCW Saturday night, Saturday morning, all that stuff.
Well, it's almost like I wish I'd have been smarter. In other words, meaning have that Monday night thing that we had going on. I did that a lot. I was the hosting house though, obviously. Record WCW and do it again on Tuesday. That'd have been the best. But I don't know. Stupid.
It is what it is. Now you can go back and watch it whenever you want. But no, because buddies and I, he used to make a killing in high school because he knew a group of wrestling fans or people that, hey, I want to watch wrestling, but I really don't want to tell everybody else because it wasn't cool back in the 90s and 2000s to be a wrestling fan. But He made a killing. It was like $2-3 a tape or something. He'd tape it and sell it or rent it. You know, he'd make a killing in high school and in middle school and what have you. But no, just to go what you're talking about, the commentary, WCW would always bring in Mike Tenay. Great. I'm sure you worked. Did you work with him in TNA?
Oh, man. Yes, me and Mike were good buddies, man. Good buddies.
But just a wealth of knowledge for the wrestling in general, and especially the culture of professional wrestling in Japan, in Mexico, And just to listen to him talk, it's just like, man, you just sit back, relax, and let the good times roll. And for those of you that don't know what I'm talking about, go over to wherever you get your wrestling. Check out the cruiserweights between 96 to 98. And you'll know why, because Mike Tenay is there. And it's absolutely great mind.
Yeah, he, you know, Mike Tenay, I know this episode is not about him, I'm just saying, but Mike Tenay was, he really got into me at Impact, TNA at the time, when I was in the meetings, and I would just come out with some shit, and it was good shit. And he would go, Jesus, like, I can't believe he said that, but fuck, it's so true. Mm-hmm. And he would come up to me after the meetings, and he would just like put me over. And he was a super, super guy. And you're so right. The knowledge that guy's got is unbelievable. And if you ever want to bet on a sports game and you don't know what to do, call Mike today. He'll tell you exactly what to do. That man's made lots of money on gambling.
Any sport.
Yes. I mean, he's a Vegas guy. So he knows his shit, man. He knows everything. That's smart. That's a smart, smart man.
Yeah. Well, I'll keep that in mind. I got a buddy of mine too that's out in the Phoenix area that I always ask him, like, come football season, I'm like, okay, who do I bet on? Should I bet the line? Should I bet the over under? What should I do?
Mike today's your guy. I'm telling you right now. Yeah. I've sat around for hours and talked to this guy about betting, and I'm actually taking some of advice and won some damn money. But yeah. I just bad about calling the guy up every second I want to win some money. But no, good dude, man, and I don't know what happened to him as far as, you know, being in Impact or whatever, but man, it'd be nice, wouldn't it, at Slammiversary if he was to come back and call a match or two?
Oh, dude, I would be tickled pink. That would pop me so hard to watch him call another match. Just one last time. He doesn't have to do the whole, just one match. That's all I want to do. How about him in the X Division match?
Oh my gosh. He would know everything too. Watch, guarantee
you. He would know every move.
Oh, everything and every move. Yep. And then hopefully there's a good Mexican place around us when that show's over, if he's there, and we'll definitely hit that. That was me and his thing. Me and my dad would just meet at this Mexican restaurant in Orlando, and we would eat. We used to call the pregnant burritos. Those things were huge.
Right. No, it's late night drinking at the bar and then going out to the burritos. Seems like a good time, but nothing wrong can happen like right that, right?
Oh, I don't know. Not with Mike.
Oh, of course not. Of course. He'd probably find some reason to not, but so 99 rolls around with Ray. NWO's form, it's in full blow. And at this time, the LWO is kind of on the edge of it. And they're talking about Super Brawl 9. Mysterio and Conan would go against Hall and Nash. And it would be a hair versus mask match. You know, we've seen this. This was 99. We saw it in 97 with him and Eddie. And they lose. So Ray has to remove his mask. From dealing with a lot with Ray, as much as you did, just explain just the culture of the heritage, the history of that Lucha mask, because it's a very crucial thing.
No, that is a very, very crucial thing. And I remember that too. I remember that. And I couldn't believe the way they did it. What there was no storyline behind it. It was just like, all right, let's just take Ray's mask off. Let's see what we got. And I can tell you right now, and you know, going through, you know, notes and stuff like that we take and format sheets and all that, he even was quoted as, you know, saying that he was strongly against it. Mm-hmm. And because, you know, like I was saying, it meant a lot to guys of that culture. And it meant a lot to him, and it meant a lot to not only him, but it meant a lot to him and his fans and his family. So, he even was quoted as saying it was just a terrible move on their behalf. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I think it was just a frustrating moment for him. And I don't know. It didn't make sense to me. And obviously he couldn't agree or not agree. He had to do what he had to do because I'm assuming he'd be afraid for his job. So, you know, the culture of that mask is unbelievable. We have a guy in Impact Wrestling named Laredo Kid. It means the world to him. We have another guy named Tarus. It means the world to him to have that mask on because, you know, it's just what they do. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it kind of sucked for him. And I know he really was against it. And like I said, he was quoted as saying that. He actually blamed Eric Bischoff for that. So kind of crazy, but. And I'm not saying Eric is the one to blame. I'm not saying that at all. But what I'm saying is, you know, it was his regime. And, you know, I guess that's where you have to go first. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And they did the same thing to Juventud Guerrero. And they did the same thing to Psicosis, too. It's like, I know things are meant to happen, but it's just like, okay, well, there's some certain things that you just can't. I don't like seeing, you know, guys taking their masks and all that stuff. It's one thing if it's some random guy that has it and has had it for a short time, I get that. But it's with guys like Hoovy and Ray and Psicosis that have had it their whole careers, and now they have to figure out what to do without them. And I think that pretty much hurt them initially. And I don't think really guys like Psicosis really ever recovered, because then he'd end up on over in WWE there too, as the Mexicools. So
yeah, that was something too. Vince was Vince loved that. By the way, he really did. He loved that. But no, I also remember Ray doing okay when he lost his mask, though. I do remember that. So that was, you know, good on him. But yeah, I mean, it's still, like you said, it kind of leaves you out there by yourself, like on an island.
Right, right. No, I get it. So 2002, June of 2002, excuse me. Mysterio would sign with the WWE, and promos that would hype his debut airing, saying the Junior was dropped from his name and was billed as Rey Mysterio. So for the context, that the longest time in WCW, he was Rey Mysterio, Rey Mysterio Jr. After his uncle, Rey Mysterio Sr. So it's one of those things, we get those lineage time and time again. Those Lucha Libre wrestlers get that lineage all the way back. So he would debut with his mask, thank God, because that's, I think those are moneymakers too for the business and for Ray in general too.
Absolutely they are. Ray's mask was probably one of the highest grossing items on the table, other than, let's just say, you're John Cena maybe then, or whoever the top guy was when he first came in, because I really don't remember, you know, who that was. But and I think at one point in time when Ray was there, he was the top selling merch guy with his mask. Mm-hmm. So I mean, like you said, they were just throwing money away. I mean, just like throwing it away. It doesn't cost much money to make these replica masks.
So he would debut on the July 25th, 2002 edition of SmackDown, as he would face Chavo Guerrero. Oh, dude, was that about the time? Because that 2002 was really your wheelhouse when you're really going hardcore there, better use of terms, on SmackDown there, right?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So he would, like I said, Chavo, were you involved with his debut, the match there? Or was that Chavo that you were part of? Their debuts. Because I want to say I remember seeing you part of Ray's debut there. I'd have to go back and be sure, 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure when I did my research, you were part of it.
I did a lot of matches with him, but I'm not quite sure if I did the debut match for Ray when he came back. Not quite sure. I almost want to say it was Jimmy Gordares, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Maybe. I was going to say, it's usually one of the, either you or him that mainstays there in SmackDown, but... So he would eventually start feud there in 2002 with Kurt Angle, culminating at SummerSlam. And do you remember that? I remember it vividly because 2002 was that was on Long Island. But that match was absolutely bonkers, man.
No, there was a lot. There was a, I put it this way. The monitor was sold out, as we say, sold out. I mean, completely sold out. Everybody was just in highly anticipating his first time here in WWE. So yeah, it was pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. It was a great start to his long career.
Yeah. You know, so I don't want to get too far into the weeds with his career right when he first started here. He'd go on to win tag team gold with Edge, taking on Eddie and Chavo. He would team with Edge quite frequently at this time. So we really built up that relationship with him. So it's good to see that. But I wanted to fast forward just before we get to our third count. Talk about 2006. He would go on as the second entrant in 2006 Royal Rumble, which he would then win, facing then Randy Orton and Kurt Angle at that next WrestleMania. Do you, this is that first Royal Rumble. They're really playing up this angle with Ray and Eddie. Eddie would pass in November of 2005. Do you remember I know you probably might've been a blur at this time, but do you remember just this, the atmosphere with when Ray ended up winning that Royal Rumble?
Oh, the place went crazy because no one thought he was going to be able to win that. You know, you look at, and I'm sure he's been his whole career because of his size. No one thought that he would have won that match. I mean, that the Rumble. Just like no one knew or thought he would ever become world champion. You know what I mean? So he always fought from underneath. So the guy just, he was just a moneymaker, man, a moneymaker. And he just did so much in his career, and it just blew it up when he got to WWE. It was amazing, man. It was amazing to watch. And what a great guy too. Couldn't have gave it to him.
Well, and like I said, it's just, I remember it so vividly. It's just winning the heavyweight title for the first time. And it's just, they're really playing on those heartstrings. I loved it. And a lot of people will knock it about this or knock it about that just because, oh, well, they're playing off of Eddie's death and this. And I'm like, well, just take wrestling for what it is. Don't think about it too much, because if you think about it too much, you're going to wreck it for yourself. But before we get to our third count, I just wanted to ask you, with the longevity of his career, he's still going nowadays with his son, Dominic. What do you think really played into his drive for this business? Was it just because it was a part of him for so long? Or do you think it was just personal motivation to, you know, just be the absolute best you can be?
Well, I think that his family heritage is kind of like mine in a way, where it's just in your blood. And when he went away for a while and came back, I literally really thought that was the end of Ray. When he came back, I was shocked. Mm-hmm. And the reasons why I was shocked is because of the fact that that guy has made a lot of money and has put a lot of money away. I've talked to him before at links. When it came to money, not about amounts and stuff like that. I'm talking about the way you save money, the way you do things with money. I know he didn't need it when he came back. So that's nothing more than just heart and blood that's in your blood to come back. And also, he's not a young spring chicken.
He's 47.
He's 47 years old. Okay. So he's my age. He's doing what he's doing at his level. I mean, come on. So, wow. You can't say anything else, man. It's just amazing. So I just think it's in his blood, and he just loves the business. And I also think that his son played a big part in it as well. I think he wanted to do exactly what he's doing now and be involved with his son.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about that to our third count of this episode. Our third count of this episode, we're actually going to talk about a match that you were a part of from September 9th, 2005. It was a cage match, Rey Mysterio versus Eddie Guerrero, the Gwinnett Center in Atlanta, Georgia. I find it fairly interesting, Brian, that this was the stronghold for WCW for so many years, being in Atlanta. Do you think that was just kind of ironic, or was just one of those things that they kind of, happy accident?
definitely a happy accident. They didn't think this part. There's no way. I think it was just an accident. I really do. Mm-hmm. Could be wrong. Someone may have researched, looked into, and said, "Hey, let's bring this back to Atlanta." But I don't feel that.
So if you guys want to watch this, it's season 7, episode 36 on Peacock. If you want to watch it, or you can just simply, I'll put the link from the YouTube. It's on YouTube. I'll put it in the show notes. So you can save that time. So I want to get your thoughts. It's been a constant argument, discussion, what have you, with wrestling fans for years about WWE's cage matches. Escape, pinfall, or submission? Shouldn't it just be pinfall, submission? In your opinion?
I do have a problem with the escape. Mm-hmm. I do. I don't understand why you want to. To me, the idea is to keep two people that have a big feud in a cage. So no one can get out and settle their differences. That's the way a cage has always been back in the day. But of course, we always change things. It's like everything changes. So I'm not beating the wrestling world up. I'm not beating that matchup. But what I'm saying, everything changes. I mean, now they got pitch clocks for pitching. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, so everything changes, everything evolves. And all I can say is, me personally, I think what you just said should be the way cage matches are, and that's it.
Yeah, no, I get that. But it's one of those things, they want that old, kind of that old NWA Crockett way of doing it, where you want to keep people in. You don't want to get people out. You don't want to be able to get out. We saw it in this match too, but we'll get to that in a little bit. So I want to get your, this is pretty much Eddie's last big major feud. He'd be, unfortunately, be passing away 2 months from here. Did you see any writing on the wall, or is he starting to slow down at this time, or was kind of, he's facing Ray. They've worked together so many times. They knew what to do.
No, I didn't see him slowing down at all. I really didn't. I know that Eddie was very excited about this match, as was Ray. They were having they had a goal to kill it, to kill that match, to make it a memorable match, to steal the show per se. Those guys were really ready for this. Yeah, no, I don't see him as slowing down now.
Yeah. So being the third man in the ring for a cage match, obviously a lot of us don't have the experience of being in a cage match or being anywhere near inside in a cage. Were you preparing a little bit differently for this, or was it just kind of like, hey, I was comfortable with Ray and Eddie, it's just another match kind of thing?
No, cage matches are really different. Really different. Because you have to remember, there's nowhere to go. You're in there, man. It's a little intimidating. Mm-hmm. If you were to ever just like step in a ring, it gets a little crazy as well, just because it's just, it's the battleground. Mm-hmm. And then you put a fence around it. And you climb in there, and then all competitors get in there, and all of a sudden they lock it. No, there's a different mentality. Obviously, yeah. There's a different mindset getting into a cage. Yeah.
So this is going to be the second stipulation match that these two guys have had within the last couple months. They're coming off their SummerSlam match where they had a ladder match for the custody of Dominic. Yes, that is true. I did not stutter. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on this? Was this just kind of one of those things they said, okay, well, just kind of throwing ideas out there and see what stuck?
No, I think it was another layer to a storyline, where Eddie didn't mind using his son. It was fine with him, obviously, or he would have never happened. And I just think that this was just another level to that storyline. Not a big fan of it, but hey, it did its work. It was intriguing. People were into it. It wasn't one. Like I said, all I say is it wasn't my favorite storyline of that feud. But it just added another layer. And it was actually, in some points, you know, when you go back and watch, you know, that stuff leading up to the match, it was pretty cool in a way. I mean, it was intriguing, and it did bring some uncomfortable weirdness to it, which is what a lot of people like, unfortunately.
Right. Well, then and now, even sometimes it's like, okay, well, we're going to do it. Well, I guess we're going to do it, but
let's move forward.
Yeah, you're right. Kind of go forward. With Ray and Eddie, you know, we talked about their feuds there in 97, 98, 96, what have you. They worked a little bit in ECW too. Were there any two better guys with chemistry as far as in ring other than these two?
Oh, they were special, man. They were special. They knew each other back and forth, front to back, up and down, side to side. They knew. And just the way they countered everything and just the way they were able to, I would say, contort their bodies into all these crazy maneuvers and things of that nature. No, I mean, they had chemistry that was ungodly. It really was. And it was just an awesome thing to watch. And it was one of those things, I'll tell you, this happens to me sometimes, and I don't mean it to be, but it just happens sometimes. It does. And this is one of those moments where you're caught in the moment as a referee. You're almost like a fan and you're watching. You're like, oh shit, I'm refereeing this, you know, because it's so good. It just, I don't know the word. It's just, it just kind of like, it's so good and flows so good. And the moves and the reversals and this and that and that. And you're just kind of like standing there like watching. And it's like, oh shit, this shit's fucking awesome. And then then the next moment you're like, oh shit, I need to count.
You know, right.
Yeah, you just kind of get lost, and it's sometimes fun to get lost. It really is. I know it sounds like a bad thing, but it just sounds true, is what it is.
What's reality?
No, it really is. It truly, really is. I've done that several times, not with just them. I'm saying just in general, but they were one of the ones that I've just been like wowed and lost. And I've had those moments throughout my career, and I'm sure any referee that's ever refereed a decent match will tell you that sometimes you get lost in that pageantry. You get lost in the story build and the passion that goes into it. And you're kind of watching, you know what I mean? You don't mean to be,
right?
You kind of get stuck in blocks and you just can't move.
Yeah. So just put a little context into this. Did they end up having to, were they worried about the rest of this card? Because they were pretty much smack dab in the middle of the SmackDown. And the two matches after, they weren't even the main event. You know, normally a lot of the time you think, okay, a cage match, you're going to be main eventing. Not so much on this SmackDown. You still had, after this, you had Benoit versus Jordan for the U.S. title. And then the main event was a bull rope match between JBL and Batista. Were they worried about anything as far as regarding other matches? Or were they just saying, okay, you know, screw them, we're going to steal the damn show?
So this was wow, they had all that on the show?
You had this match, the cage match. Then you had the Benoit Orlando Jordan for the U.S. title. And then you had JBL versus Batista in a bull rope match. Main eventing.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Righty then. I know they weren't worried about anything. I know that. Yeah. Maybe that's why, now that you've told me what went on that evening on a packed SmackDown show. Maybe that's why I told you earlier when we were first talking about this, that they were ready to steal the show. So that makes more sense now that I've remembered what was after it now.
With the chemistry that they had, were they ever worried about calling a lot of the stuff in the back, or were they just basically saying, okay, at this time stamp, we're going to do this move at this one, we're going to do this one? Or were they just basically going, hey, we'll call it in the ring, we're not going to worry about it now, we'll just do it in the ring?
Eddie and Ray didn't call much at all in the back. They would call enough, you know, but then they would be like, yeah, we'll do our deal. And of course, you know, a lot of times they would talk Spanish, so obviously I'm not quite sure what's being said. But you know, Eddie and I mean, it wasn't Ray as much, but I would go to him separately, you know, just because everybody has their own way of thinking, you know what I mean? So I would go to Eddie, and because Eddie was the senior, then check with him, and he would go over everything he thinks I need to know. And I knew it would always be a lengthy conversation with Eddie, which I never minded. And Ray was more to that. We got to do this. We got to do that. We got to do this. And then here's the deal. And then boom, we're done. And I'm like, okay. So, you know, long story short, there wasn't, they weren't meeting all day or anything like this. That's for sure. This was something that they pretty much knew what they were doing. They wanted to add this. They wanted to add that. They spent some time in the ring that day. And it was, like I said, it wasn't a normal match where you could tell these are two guys that were totally ready to do what they do and knew each other.
Yeah. So Ray, before the match even starts, Ray is undefeated against Eddie in every match that they've had. He's 7-0. Was there any type of, you know, controversy, was any talks about that, or were they just, oh, it's a storyline kind of thing, we're just going, you don't have to really win to get over kind of thing?
Eddie didn't give a shit about that 7-0. That 7-0 meant nothing to him. Nor Ray, neither one of them. This is just something that was done, probably not even on purpose, and they went back and they went, oh, wow, Mysterio's 7-0 against Eddie. We got to bring this up, make the story. You know what I mean? Because sometimes things like that happen and don't really mean to happen.
Right. So, you know, was Ray always the consummate professional businessman at this time? Or was he kind of like one of those guys that would, you know, go out to the bar after the show, have a couple pops? Or was who was this one? And who was this couple of his travel partners?
Ray liked to have a good time. He did. And obviously I would never say there's anything wrong with that because I like to have a good time. But no, he liked to drink, partake and hang around. Yeah, he did. Yeah. He had, you know, his travel buddies always were, it varied. I would say his biggest travel buddy was probably, cause he had a few, him and Randy traveled a little bit together. Him and, Mike Chioda actually traveled around a little bit together. So I've traveled with almost every person we've talked about on our podcast, but I've never traveled around with Rey Mysterio.
Really?
So there, people.
there is something that you haven't done yet, right?
Yeah. People think I lie about that. No. All right. So Rey, I have not traveled with, but I have hung out and party with him.
Yeah.
He also used to hang out with Rikishi when Rikishi was around.
Sure.
They were good buddies. He had a lot of buddies, man. Ray was a pretty popular guy in the locker room. Very popular. Well, everybody loves
him. Well, yeah, I'm sure he still is too. Even on the even with the young roster that they have now, everybody's probably watched him or grew up watching him. But
probably worse for him now. He's probably like, shit, everybody wants that.
So, any good from the brief time that he was there, and you were there at the same time. But any good stories, backstage stories, road stories from Ray, or was it kind of kept it close to the cuff?
Ray was a ribber too, man. He liked to rib people. He really did. I'm trying to think, cause he tried to rib me. Well, he didn't try. He did. I can't remember how it went down though. I believe I was in trouble. I thought I was.
Yeah.
And he really put the axe in there and kind of maneuvered it around a little bit to my heart. And I just don't remember how it completely went down because I wanted to forget about that shit. Yeah. But no, overall, Ray was a ribber, but he did it fun. It was not to hurt anybody or anything like that. But he was the life of a party. He was. When we had some stuff going on and everybody got together, he was the life of that party. Great, just a great guy, man, and charismatic as shit. If you've never met Ray, it's unbelievable. I remember, and this is a shoot. I remember when I was on the road, and he was in WCW, and I was in WWE. They came to Richmond, where I live at. He actually went downtown Richmond and partied, and ran into my friends, and they were like, man, we got to hang out with him all fucking night, dude. This guy is fucking great. Da 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 da. He's crazy and da 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 da. That's the kind of guy he was. That's the kind of guy he was. And of course, they told him they knew me, which I hate that shit. But so yeah, so that was Ray was just the center of the party of the life. The locker room would light it up. Just a really, really cool guy. Big time family guy, big time. So I could, you know, always take my hat off to that. But yeah, just a great dude, man. Just a great guy.
So I'm going to get back to that in 1 second. I just wanted to see, just talk about this finish. Ray would go for the crossbody off the top of the cage, miss it, which was a fucking hell of a bump to take at that time. And then Eddie goes to leave the cage, walk out of the cage door, but then he thinks about it again, goes up 5-star frog splash and wins. What was that time? Did you know that was going to happen? Did they inform you, hey, this is going to be the ending, this is going to be the start, this is going to be the finish?
Oh yeah. 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 I knew all that. It's just, I didn't think it was going to take that long. It took longer. But I guess that's the pageantry of it. I think that's what made it so good, because Eddie was so good at that with facials and selling. Obviously, Brady can't do it as much because he wears a mask.
Right.
So it's more eyeballs and head turn. Mm-hmm. But no, yeah, I knew that was the that's where we were going. And like I said, it felt like when we talked about it, it was just going to be much quicker, and right. It just kind of, you know, longer. Which, if you go back and watch it, it was, nobody would ever think what I'm saying is even. It wasn't too long. It just felt like it to me. It just took longer than I thought. And that's what it is. It's called storytelling. So, yeah.
Yeah. You obviously just think it was a storytelling. It wasn't think it was anything malicious or whatever. They were like, they wanted to go over or whatever. It was just,
oh no.
It just happened.
Yeah. Nothing like that.
So at the end of the day, this will pretty much be like the end of their feud here. Do you really think that Eddie, encompassing Ray's whole career, Eddie's biggest rival, right?
It's got to be, man. I mean, the history, the heritage, all that stuff. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I would have to say that. Yeah. I'm not saying it's the best one and all that stuff.
Sure.
But it's got to be the biggest between both of them. I would think both of them would probably say the same thing.
So we mentioned Dominic, Ray's son, letting the Mysterio name live on through his career here in the WWE. Dude, knowing Ray the way you do, how tickled pink do you think he is to see his son going right now?
I think he's so happy, man. It's not even funny. I knew Dominic when he was just a little boy. And it's amazing, you know, when I flipped the TV on, watch wrestling and see Dominic on there. It's just amazing. It's eye popping. Dominic was the littlest, cutest little kid I've ever seen. Honestly, he really was. And just Ray loved him to death. I mean, Ray took him everywhere. Ray didn't do anything when he was on the road with him. I mean, not a thing. Mm-hmm. It was just awesome. And then to see him now is just like so incredible. And so happy for him. And I know Ray is just eat up with happiness, just eat up with him. And you know what? That's so cool. That's so cool.
All right. So that is going to do it for this episode. Next week, Brian, we are going to be, we'll be making your special announcement going forward. So tune in next week. We're going to have that big announcement and we're going to just, you know, talk shop. You know, we're going to kind of stray away from our normal format. And we're just kind of just talk about, you know, Brian Hebner.
Well, we're not going to just talk about Brian Hebner. We're going to talk about what Brian Hebner's doing.
Well, that too.
but yeah, I have hopefully some surprises too, as far as some people on our show. And we're going to figure out what's going on with me and my career. And yeah, I'm excited, man. It's going to be the week before Slammiversary, or a couple days before Slammiversary.
Correct, yeah.
So I'm excited about that. Once again, there are some surprises at Slammiversary that I am aware of. So excited about that. And yeah, man, I'm ready to dig into that for sure. And I'm hoping everybody will tune in here first, because you won't hear it anywhere else except Reffing It Up. And that'll be next week. Yeah, it's going to be a big episode.
Yeah. So a couple of shout outs real quick. You were just on the Ringside podcast with Daniel Spencer. Want to get a quick shout out to him for having you on. Absolutely. He sent it over to me early and I listened to it. You can listen to wherever you get podcasts. You listen to this. Just came out yesterday. I would highly suggest you guys go over and subscribe and listen to it though.
Yeah, it was fun, man. I had a lot of fun. Yeah.
Also want to give a shout out to AJ McKay. Absolutely phenomenal. Phenomenal. We can't put him over enough because he's done such a great job with our intro.
Oh my gosh. It's the best. It's the best, man. I could probably listen to it all day, all day.
I have.
Well, I don't know if I've done that, but I have listened quite a bit.
Yeah. All right. So Brian, how people get a hold of you?
Well, I'm at Baby Shop. At Baby Hebner on Twitter and on Instagram. So I make it kind of easy and nice for everybody to follow or give me a shout out or whatever you want to do. Want to always iterate, really do appreciate everybody that listens to my podcast each and every week. And if you're a new listener, thank you for listening. And otherwise, I'm ready to sign out.
All right. Well, tune in next week. You can hit up the show's website there at castby.com/reffinitup. Have all our links there, all the social medias. Make it nice and easy for you as well. So make sure you tune in next week. It's going to be a big, big week, Brian. So until then, we'll see you right here next week.
1, 2, 3.